Bloom Shapiro, accounting, tax, and business advisors, maintaining an unwavering focus on your future so you can focus on what's most important to you, your business, in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Reston, Virginia, and Greater Boston. Step forward at BloomShapiro.com.
What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Hi, I'm Larry Rifkin. Welcome to another special edition of America Trends Podcast, built expressly for the difficult moment we find ourselves in. In this episode, we explore an issue that has been trending at least since 2004, and that is the disassembling of America's ability to manufacture its own drugs. It was in that year that the last U.S. plant to make penicillin, a Bristol-Myers Squibb operation in Syracuse, New York, shuttered its doors. And in looking at the period from 2010 to 2018, U.S. imports of pharmaceuticals from China increased 75%. In fact, our dependence on the Chinese is magnified by virtue of the fact that that country is the source for the active ingredients of many drugs produced elsewhere. China is also a dominant player in the generic drug manufacturing market, which constitutes the vast majority of drugs consumed in America. And 90% of the antibiotics we rely on come from China. It's a picture of dependence on a competitor for life-saving drugs, and not any competitor. It's the one with whom we've been locked in a trade war in the moment of public health crises here in America and across the globe. Not a promising picture in the least. We explore its many ramifications and what we must do to address it short-term and long-term. We turn to the expert so many in our country recognize for her scholarship on this topic, Rosemary Gibson of the Hastings Center, today on America Trends.
With me on the line on America Trends is Rosemary Gibson, senior advisor at the Hastings Center and author of China Rx, Exposing America's Dependence on China for Medicine. She's written a number of other books, and she's America's thought leader, really, on the safety and reliability of our pharmaceutical and medical supply chain. And I was reading over some of the testimony that you gave recently to a commission that has been established, the U.S.-China Economic and Security Review Commission. And you said at the outset that this really hidden and overlooked threat to our national health security, our economic prosperity, and national security remains our dependence on China for medicine. And I know this is beginning to get more attention, but you have been warning us about this for some time. There have been certainly reports that have come out for the last 10 years about this. Why has so little been done to make us more independent?
Our dependence on China for medicine has been hidden from the public and many people who make policy and make our government run. And it took me 3 years to figure this out, to write China Rx. And I met individuals in industry and government who had some sense of it. But what China Rx does is it put it all together. And when you put all the pieces together, it tells a really compelling and profound story. And regrettably, I think it's on page 3 of the preface, China Rx predicted this current situation we're in. It said that in the event of a natural disaster or global pandemic, if China shuts the doors on exports, the United States and other countries will wait in line for critical drugs. And here we're seeing that, and certainly it's true for personal protective gear like masks and ventilators and respirators.
And what kind of danger are we in? In other words, we keep hearing about the need for PPEs and ventilators and the like. How much has China begun to restrict or find other customers in great need across the globe such that America's needs cannot be met?
On April 1st, the Chinese government issued an order restricting exports of testing and testing kits and personal protective equipment like masks. And certainly we saw earlier reports in Australia and in the media there, the Sydney Morning Herald, that Chinese companies had told their employees working in Australia to get as many masks and other personal protective gear and send it over to China. And we saw a lot of foreign buyers buying masks from the United States, from our warehouses, millions and millions of them. Those foreign buyers were not identified. So we're seeing a lot of activity going on, and as a result, here in the U.S., we may have had enough product, but it disappeared. It was sold to the highest bidder. But what we don't hear about, Larry, are our medicines. We hear about masks and all of that, but our medicines are the industry term being on allocation, as they say, which is a euphemism for rationing. Yeah, we had drug shortages before all of this, but now with this global pandemic, it only escalates the concern about those shortages.
Well, some of those shortages that you talk about, we are so reliant upon the Chinese. 90% of all of the generics that are utilized, well, about 90% of all our medications are generics, and they control a lot of the building blocks of those medicines. And, of course, when we went back and looked at penicillin and the story of penicillin, that might be illustrative of what's happened here to the decimation of our own industry here in the United States.
Yep, that's right. The penicillin story is an amazing one. A lot of your listeners may be surprised to learn that we cannot make penicillin anymore in the United States. The last plant closed in 2004. It was upstate New York, the Bristol-Myers Squibb plant that once made 70% of the world's supply of penicillin. And I have data from industry showing how in 2004, a handful of Chinese companies dumped penicillin material on the global market at a very low price, and they kept it low for 4 years. And that drove out competitors, in the United States and even India. And then when China got global dominant share to make penicillin for the world, then it raised the price. This is the same playbook we've seen over and over again. And there was actually a court case. There's a chapter in China Rx about the penicillin and vitamin C cartels. In the vitamin C cartel case, same playbook, handful of companies from China dump it on the global market and drive out all the European, U.S., and even Indian producers. So the vitamin C that you take that's sitting on your kitchen table, if they're synthesized products, they're chemicals, they're sourced likely from China. And this is a violation of our antitrust laws. And there's been a court case brewing in federal court since about 2005, and it's still not resolved yet. And in that court case, the Chinese government argued that we required our companies to fix prices and to control supply to the United States as a matter of Chinese law.
And now, you've also written that when European firms tried to sell their penicillin ingredients to China, the government imposed high trade barriers, charged astronomical fees for product testing, and held foreign firms to a higher standard than domestic ones. Did we address any of this in phase one of the trade deal? Because this is such a vulnerability. I mean, you've told us, and in your testimony you indicated, our industrial base for medicine, which is perhaps as important as defense products, that it's collapsing from beneath us.
That's right. Our industrial base to make our critical drugs, you said rightly so, 90% of the medicines we take are generic. It's collapsing. Western companies are getting out of the business. And insofar as, you know, the phase one trade deal, you know, you have to have some manufacturing capability here enough before you, you know, raise tariffs. You have to have something to protect. And we have virtually none of the chemical starting material or the ability to make the active ingredients for so many of our generic drugs. So we don't have much to protect.
Can we go back to that issue of the stockpile? We've heard a lot about it, the federal government and the states arguing about what it's there to do. And you're saying that we have depleted a lot of the medical products within it because we were selling them overseas. There's such confusion now about our relationship as it relates to the rest of the world. Recently, of course, Russia came and we bought some product from them as it relates to medical supplies. And we see countries that we are friendly with, that we're allied with, and we're all competing against each other at this moment in time. And then I see this image based upon so much of your work of China sitting there hovering over the entire world's supply. So put this in perspective for us.
China knows exactly our vulnerability and the world's vulnerability. I was just on the phone with a reporter from Europe, and the reporter said this is the exact same situation we have in France and Germany in terms of dependence on China. And last week, Dutch public television aired a documentary on China's medicinal power in an era of coronavirus. So this is all part of a deliberate strategy. It's not just because China's cheaper, has cheaper labor. This is all part of a plan to use illegal trade practices, which no one's challenged, to take over or at least gain dominance in the production of critical drugs. I just want to clarify on the stockpile. That's the national stockpile. All of that stays within the United States. That is meant for... It's not meant to supplant the whole supply that we need every day in hospitals. It was designed for like regional events like Hurricane Sandy or Hurricane Katrina. And that stockpile stays here in the U.S.
Oh, okay.
But mm-hmm. what we saw is that brokers having product wherever they get it from in warehouses in the United States, somewhere, somebody has them somewhere, they were selling them to the highest bidder and to foreign buyers. In one day, there was an article in Forbes, 26 million N95 masks left the country. These were private sector people operating, undermining the welfare of our healthcare workers. So if people want to point fingers, we really have to have a complete understanding of all the actors that have been involved in what's been taking place. Just one other point about the Strategic National Stockpile. It's an incredible national resource. But 85% of what's in there, it's got personal protective gear and critical medicines. But 85% of what's in there depends to some degree on Chinese components. That's what we have to change, as well as for our military. Our military, there were 24 men and women in the aircraft carrier, the USS Theodore Roosevelt, patrolling in the South China Sea that were diagnosed with coronavirus. And that ship was brought to shore and everybody tested. But if they need to be hospitalized, the medicines they need, they're dependent on the adversaries that they're overlooking in the South China Sea for those cool drugs, for the core components in them.
When we hear the debate that goes on about the use of the Defense Production Act and the responsibility of the federal government strategically to oversee the deployment of the material that we have and to bring American companies, wherever they are producing, to a certain account on all of this, how do you react to that debate?
Well, in emergency situations where countries are pulling up their drawbridges, and 70 countries I've heard are no longer allowing exports of critical products, whether it's medicines or protective gear. And so that means we have to do it ourselves, and we have to take whatever means are necessary. Hopefully this will not be business as usual, and hopefully we have a plan going forward where we don't allow exports, things to leave our shores when we need them here during a pandemic, but also that we have our domestic production capability here up and running, ready to go. And that is, and there's, I think, tremendous opportunity. There are smaller companies here in the United States that are innovative, brilliant people who've worked in the industry for many years and can deploy advanced manufacturing technology to make, in the case of medicines, make them faster, cheaper, with a smaller environmental footprint, and real-time quality control. All of the products that we need, all the components for our medicines. we don't have to rely on supply chains from thousands of miles away, where the FDA, by the way, is no longer in there inspecting those plants when it comes to medicines. And
yeah, when were they pulled out?
They were pulled out, I think, earlier this year. And I think we're seeing the beginning of the end of the FDA's ability to be effective and to protect the American public insofar as China's concerned. And bear in mind, the United States imports a lot of food from there. And where are those inspectors aren't over there.
And you've said, yes, not only do we worry about the supply, but also the quality of the material that goes into these various drugs. You even talk about pig intestines that none of us think about as rare earth material. Why don't you lay that out for us?
Sure. I'm sure many of your listeners may enjoy bacon on Sunday morning or a nice ham every once in a while on a Sunday or Saturday. And one of the largest pork producers in the world, the largest pork processor, is Smithfield, located in Southern Virginia, Smithfield. And that company was sold to a Chinese private firm about 6 years ago. And that private Chinese company got a $4 billion loan overnight from the State Bank of China. So we know this is not strictly a private sector activity. This is certainly government intervention in the purchase of a U.S. asset. And that was done primarily because China is a consumer of pork, and we're seeing now they had another disease outbreak among the pig population this past fall, worse than what it was before. And so this is to provide a supply of food, but it also, pig intestines are a source of a raw material for a critical drug used in every hospital in the country and kidney dialysis centers. And that blood center is called heparin. And about 12 years ago, hundreds of Americans died from contaminated raw material that came from a plant in China. And it was deliberately done for economic reasons. And it was a very deceptive, very duplicitous strategy they used to put a lethal contaminant at high doses in a blood thinner that's administered to critically ill people in the United States and around the world.
That's heparin.
And even after that, we didn't change.
Mm-hmm.
Even after that, I'm told the same people running that operation in China, the same ones running it now. And nobody goes to jail for that. Nobody's arrested in China. But when there was a vaccine scandal, you know, people were arrested in large numbers, but when it hurts Americans. One of the interesting lines in China Rx is the attitude of Chinese producers, which is one of the reasons our product is so cheap is because we assume no liability for it, which means there's no consumer protection. And as China gains more and more market share, they're now making 10% of our generic drugs. They had zero market share 12 years ago, and they're ramping up quickly. And we're approaching a point where it'll be take it or leave it. We have it, you don't. We can make it, you can't. This is it, take it or leave it.
And in the midst of this pandemic and the potential that we're seeing in other countries, that one wave has gone by, there's another wave and another wave. And let's say this goes on for 12, 18 months before a vaccine or some other curative is on the market. What do you see happening?
Well, there is an executive order that's being drafted that would have Buy American provisions for the Department of Defense, the VA, and the Strategic National Stockpile, with the intention of using those procurement dollars instead of sending that money to China, that we would keep that money here and pay good people that want to make generic drugs that are critical for our country here in the United States at a fair price, full transparency, and as many of the core components here as possible. There's also a bill introduced by Senator Cotton from Arkansas that would say, it's out there, it says within 5 years, DOD, Department of Defense, and VA, you can't buy any medicines with components made in China. That's an aggressive timeline, but we have to have a goal. We have to think in those terms and not just make this, well, I hope so. Because we're going to have another coronavirus or something like it. It's inevitable. And so next time we have a better chance of being very well prepared and not having this dependence. And more than that, we can bring manufacturing jobs back to this country. In China RX, I talk about the towns that have been devastated, the communities, with job losses because these huge plants have shut down. And these are STEM jobs. These are the technical jobs. These are the jobs that are supposed to be the jobs for the future of our economy. And one of the most surprising things that I learned while writing China RX was at the end when I went up to a hearing on Capitol Hill. And there was spellbinding testimony from a very brilliant guy who had been asked by 20 different industries to come in and look and do some forensic analysis of anomalies that they were seeing. And he confirmed what they were seeing, and he said, what we have here is a deliberate strategy on the part of the Chinese government to disrupt, dominate, and displace the 20 advanced industries in the United States and Western countries that are the future of our economies. They're where the jobs will come from. It's where our technological prowess will come from.
So when you look at this issue in relation to defense-related products, I know a senator in my state has been really about the process of Buy American. What do you think is even more critical? Is it the medicines, or is it defense-related products, or are they intertwined?
Well, the Buy American is for medicines for the military, and that's what I've been focused on. And that's absolutely crucial. Because if we can bring it back to the Department of Defense and rebuild some basic manufacturing capability, one would hope that that will be there and drive private sector, you know, hospitals to purchase from domestic manufacturers also. But there's so much that we have outsourced to China with in terms of defense equipment and materiel. There's a rare earth needed for nitrogen goggles and fuel for the Hellfire missiles. And these small components, bolts, and things that if we don't have, our ability to make state-of-the-art products, we can't. That's what we have to change. And the Department of Defense has done a whole report on its vulnerabilities for supply chain. They have an unclassified and classified version and exactly went through, in the unclassified version, those vulnerabilities. And then a plan to begin to rectify them.
I mean, how big a failing do you see this on the part of the American government? And it's not just one administration. It's not just the executive branch. It's the congressional overseers. I mean, how serious a breach of faith is this with the American public, both about quality and quantity?
Well, when China RX came out, and to this day, people are outraged that we've allowed this to happen. And if you think about it, I'm a private citizen. I was not paid to do this 3 years of work, another year and a half to write China RX, but I did it because once you see it, it's so compelling and have an obligation to do something. And so we have this whole apparatus called, you know, biodefense that comes out of Washington. And these are policymakers and industry people and so we have this whole thing called biodefense, and nobody has brought up the reality that we can no longer make basic antibiotics in the United States of America. We can't make the antibiotics that you give your kids for ear infections or pneumonia or strep throat or bronchitis.
We'll be back with more of this America Trends podcast in 30 seconds. Bloom Shapiro, New England's largest independent business advisor, delivers over 40 years of experience in a broad base of services from accounting and tax to cybersecurity, technology, and transaction advisory. Bloom's experts will maintain an unwavering focus on your future so you can focus on what's most important to you, your business. Step forward at BloomShapiro.com.
And so to unspool these supply chains that have developed over the last couple of decades, what do we have to do? What kinds of incentives How quickly can we do all of this? And in the meantime, do we need some kind of diversification with other like-thinking countries, recognizing that we're all so vulnerable now because of those practices by the Chinese? Are there other governments with whom we can, at least in this interim period, begin to reclaim this valuable commodity?
The Europeans have a trade group that make the core chemicals and ingredients, and they've come out with a 5 to 10 year plan to bring some of that back to Europe. I have yet to see that for the United States, and I don't know why. So there's that possibility, but of course they're going to make product from countries. And for here, we do have companies, we have a lot of very talented pharmaceutical engineers, pharmaceutical chemists, who've worked in the industry for many years and see the predicament that we're in, and they want to bring their talent to bear to make medicines in, I call it, in the public interest, their private goods, make them as we should in the private economy. But bear in mind that these are not just, cheap commodities we're making here, which is how they're treated now, but these are valuable assets for our country. And to make them at a fair price, a transparent price, as much as we can with all those components here in the United States. And we've got to unleash that talent. People have reached out to me saying, we can do this. Here's our capability. And the federal government, though, has to buy it. They have to buy these products to give customers. So if you and I are setting up a manufacturing plant, you and I would need the Department of Defense or the VA to say, yes, we're going to buy these 10 drugs that we're going to make, that we need for our readiness. And that the only way you and I can do that is if we have a long-term contract, not just year by year with suppliers that say, well, or companies that say, well, we'll just give you a contract this year and next year if we find a cheaper price, goodbye. That's what's destroyed our manufacturing base. If you can find a 55-gallon barrel of stuff that's 5 cents cheaper in China, then they'll buy it. We can't have that. And then if you and I set up a company and it's successful and we're transparent and we're doing it in the public interest, we can't turn it around 10 years from now or 5 years from now and sell it to a Chinese company and say, they're going to pay us $5 billion for it. We have to treat this as a national security asset in some way.
And we know that economic incentives work. I was in Puerto Rico a few years back, and when they lost their tax preferences to manufacture there, a lot of that business went to China. Is it vital that all federally funded health systems, including Medicare, Medicaid, the VA, that they have providers only American-based companies?
That's what we need to aim for, and we need to start doing it right now to make critical drugs. And the other thing that's needed is, I'm supportive of more than just putting tax credits out there.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather see, here's a contract, if you and I set up a company, a contract with DOD or VA, and we agree we're going to produce this volume per year over X number of years. And we will be transparent on our cost of production, on the country of origin of everything, and we're going to make those APIs here and try to get those starting materials here too. And we're going to have independent testing of our product. We want to build in enough slack in our proposal that we will have a backup line just in case our lines go down. So there's never a shortage for our military. This is what, there's a nonprofit group that was started called Civica RX with 1,300 hospitals launched by the Mayo Clinic and others because they've been so concerned way before coronavirus with drug shortages. And there's no reason we should have shortages of anything in the United States. The only thing we have a shortage of is drugs. And this was even way before coronavirus.
And we're talking about so many other issues today. We're talking about the ventilators, the PPEs, the masks, and the like. But I've heard very little discussion, other than people like you, worrying that this medicinal reliance on China is abundantly a risky issue. And I haven't heard many who've come on many of the programs from the various hospitals. I haven't heard them talking about this. Is this going on imminently, or is this something that we have enough of a stockpile for another 3 months, 6 months? We're talking on April 9th. What's going to be happening if we're having the same discussion in January with this still looming over us as a crisis?
I think we're not hearing about the shortages of medicines because for the same reason that no one has wanted to tell us up until China Rx about the source of our medicine. And you would think hospitals would be the first ones out there about drug shortages, which have been going on for 20 years, shortages of antibiotics, but they're not speaking out about it. And neither are their suppliers. And what's the reason for that? I think it's more of the same, that they don't want us to know who's making our medicine and what's happened to our domestic industry.
But how much is this coronavirus pandemic revealing of so many shortages, so many deficiencies in our public health system? How much does this reveal, and how quickly do we have to respond to what it is we're learning?
Well, our public health infrastructure has typically been under-resourced for decades. Public health has always been at the bottom of the totem pole. It's the private sector that is able to garner the dollars for healthcare organizations, hospitals. Yeah, public health is one of those public goods. You need it when you need it, but when you don't need it, you forget about it. So this global pandemic has revealed a lot. And one of the big lessons is we can't rely on foreign suppliers, even countries that are friendly to us, neighbors. Because when what you need, and you're going to keep it for yourself and your own country family. And these are
What's the risk reward of China totally cutting us off? Do they have other customers? Or if that pandemic that we're all experiencing that started in Wuhan rears itself again in China, they need the goods for their own people. I mean, what are you most concerned about in the coming period?
I'm concerned about more of the same, but although on the bright news front, we are seeing domestic manufacturers ramping up production very quickly for masks, gloves, gowns, and that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there was money in the $8.3 billion coronavirus spending package to support that. But remarkably, there was zero money to make critical drugs and shit. This somehow keeps falling off the radar. Nobody wants to talk about it. Nobody wants to admit we have a problem. And this is going to be lethal. We already have had shortages of drugs, and people have suffered because of it. And we've had contaminated drugs, the blood pressure medicines with rocket fuel in them. So we have to have the special interests that are on board with this. And surprisingly, some of them oppose buying American-made critical drugs for our military, for the VA. It's very, very surprising.
And who is really the most uncooperative? We have a number of drug companies, and of course they have plants and manufacturing relationships all over the world. We've only got three major medical suppliers in the country. I mean, who really stands to gain the most by precluding some of this activity coming back to the U.S.?
Well, if you're a company and you've been paying manufacturers in China a very low price because the Chinese companies are subsidized by their government and because their quality is just not what it should be, you're going to want to keep that relationship so you can make maximum profit off that margin. It's still possible to make good quality drugs at a fair price here in the United States. But you can make more money when you can buy it cheaper with lower quality and persistent shortages subsidized by a foreign government. And some days those subsidies are going to go away. When you lose control over supply, which is what we have now, you lose control over quality. I mean, who's inspecting now? And you lose control over price. We have shortages now, and price goes up. So it may serve private interests, but we have to be mindful that our critical drugs are made by private companies, but they serve a public purpose.
So well said. In closing, How much time do we need to really ramp up on the medicinal side here in the United States, in your view?
There are companies that are ready to go tomorrow. They're just waiting for the contracts and the money to get going.
And what kinds of plants do they need? Are they going to be located in some of these places, as you say, that have been hollowed out by the lack of manufacturing? What do you envision seeing?
They're ready to go here in the United States. And there's a lot of empty plants here, but they're ready to go.
And are there any other thought leaders, aside from yourself, Rosemary Gibson, any other thought leaders out there who are really speaking to this? I know Jim Cramer has on CNBC. Are there political leaders? You mentioned Tom Cotton. Are there others?
Congressman Garamendi from California, a Democrat, introduced a bill with Congresswoman Vicky Hartzler, a Republican from Missouri. Senator Rubio has spoken out about this. So we're seeing interest from both sides of the aisle, which is heartening indeed. This should not be a bipartisan issue. We all will need critical drugs at some point in our lives. And these are the medicines taken by members of Congress and occupants of the White House and the military and the VA and the rest of us. So we all have a stake in the outcome here.
Rosemary Gibson from the Hastings Center, I thank you so much for being with us today. So timely and so important, the information here on America Trends. Thank you again.
Oh, thank you for having me. And China RX, it's available on Kindle, on Amazon. We donate proceeds to good causes because we care. And more product, hard copies are coming in on Amazon shortly. So I want to thank everybody. Read it. Share it with your family and friends. Your members of Congress, write letters, and together we'll make a difference.
Rosemary, stay safe and stay vocal. We need you in this fight. Thanks again for being here.
Thank you.
America Trends Podcast is part of the MHNR Network, mhnrnetwork.com. Bloom Shapiro, New England's largest independent business advisor, delivers 40 years of experience in industries from manufacturing to professional services to nonprofit.